Hare Krishna. Good morning, dear devotees. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We will begin right away today on Brihad Bhagavatamrita, chapter 4. That much I know, chapter 4. Last verse we read was 103. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Don't worry about it. Text 104. Mayaya varnanam chasya na bhaktar bahumanyate bhaktyarambe hitajuktam. Tena nastuyate prabhu. Translation. Devotees of the Lord have little regard for tales of his illusory affairs. Such narrations may be suitable in the beginning of devotional practice, but they do not factually glorify the Lord. Commentary. Maya means illusion, magic, or deception. The Supreme Lord may sometimes play tricks by pretending to assume forms that are not actually his eternal forms, svarupas. For example, Lord Vishnu showed himself disguised as Mohini, the most attractive woman. But in fact, the personality of Godhead is always male, never female. His real feminine counterpart has her own identity. Well-informed Vaishnavas, therefore, do not take the Lord's illusory shows very seriously. A person dissatisfied with this argument might counter that the descriptions of the Lord's illusory, quote, activities are indeed heard and appreciated by knowledgeable Vaishnavas. He might even quote a statement by the first spiritual master of all Vaishnavas in the material world, Lord Brahma. Mayam vanayato musya Ishvarasya numodata shrinvata shradaya nityam mayayatma namuyati. The Supreme Lord's illusory activities in association with his different energies should be described, appreciated, and heard in accordance with the Lord's teachings. If this is done regularly with devotion and respect, one is sure to get out of the Lord's illusory energy. Srimad Bhagavatam, 2nd Canto, 7th Chapter, 53rd Verse. In reply to this objection, the Vaikunthavasis argue that accounts of the Lord's illusory activities are suitable only for beginners in devotional practice. Such narrations about the Lord's Maya, including his pastimes in Gokul on earth, are not fit for glorifying the Almighty Lord of Vaikuntha. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Ukam Kuroti Vachalam Pangum Mangayate Garim Yat Kipatamaham Vande Shri Gurundina Taranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namane Namaste Sarasvate Devi Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschachade Satarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. The last verse. Well, two verses prior, we heard how the residents of Vaikuntha requested Gopakumar to not address the Lord by singing praises of his pastimes, his youthful pastimes in Gokul. They said that, as Sanatana Goswami said in commentary, they disliked hearing Lord Narayan addressed in such familiar ways as, "My dear Krishna, hey Gopal." In fact, they disapproved of addressing him by name at all. They felt uncomfortable hearing songs that focused on the Lord's childhood pastimes. In Gokula, they wanted to hear the Lord glorified in Vaikuntha style. We discussed that. And then the last verse, which we read, and read the commentary, although we didn't speak too elaborately on the commentary, but it's well connected to today's verse. But the last verse said, "To annihilate the wicked, protect the civilized, and to cheat Kamsa, the Lord disguised himself as a cowherd by his illusory energy." We also, last time we described in detail how Lord Balaram had to bring his brother to his normal state of consciousness, which was understood as being that consciousness which was suitable to reciprocate with his devotees in Dwarka. And here, we also spoke about, gave some of the statements which were made by Padmavati, in which she was complaining about the way Krishna is treated, by being sent out to do such menial work. Although he is a prince, he's sent out into the pasturing grounds to tend to the calves, inappropriate dressed, without shoes. And she was offering what she felt was her perception of how we should avoid by all means allowing Krishna to go back to that place. He's not treated properly there. And he should stay here where he's needed and where everybody can get the best opportunity for his association in Dwarka. So one of the arguments that is given here is how the Lord disguised himself as a cowherd by his illusory energy, which is the perception of the residents of Vaikuntha, understandably so. And because, as we know, Krishna did cheat Kamsa in a very wonderful way, by the way he appeared as the eighth child of Devaki, and all the arrangements that were made by Yogamaya so that Kamsa would not know that the eighth child of Devaki was Krishna. That was certainly part of the cheating, so-called cheating, which was done, which addresses the point about how Krishna, his intention was to cheat Kamsa, but also, as we understand, Krishna appeared in Mathura in his forearm form. And he first appeared in his forearm form, and then he manifested his two-arm form, and then by the arrangement of Yogamaya, the gates to the prison were opened. Vasudev was able to bring Krishna, who of course appeared as Vasudev Krishna first, which the Vaikuntha Vasis say, that's the Krishna we know in his forearm form. So it's actually when he went, he just used his deceptive powers and his control over his illusory powers, illusory energy, to manifest a form so that Kamsa would be deceived and he could hide out very nicely in Gokul. Because, of course, if he manifested his forearm form in Gokul, then certainly, according to the perception of the Vaikuntha Vasis, he certainly would have been found a lot sooner. And of course, they say that he did that not only to cheat Kamsa, but also to take care of different demons and demonesses, such as Putana. And their point was, it was temporary. He temporarily adopted this. It's okay. It's temporary. He temporarily adopted these features, but his real feature is his forearm form. And that's what they know. And of course, as we said before, there are, and as Lakshmimoni wrote down, it seems like there are liberals and conservatives in Vaikuntha, that some of the Vaikuntha Vasis had one conception, others had a similar conception, but they were able to accept that certainly these pastimes are also Krishna's pastime. So what's wrong with, you know, with singing them? And then, of course, there are others, which we will soon read. There are others who glorified the any suitable names of Krishna. Sankirtan of his names is definitely pleasing to the Lord. Don't feel bad. It's okay. They try in their friendly, non-envious, affectionate way towards Gopakumar. They took a very bold and a very persuasive argument, which at least made Gopakumar feel better about what he did. But he was originally he was very embarrassed by the first corrections that he received. Nonetheless, this point is being made that the form which the Lord adopted was a temporary form. And in today's verse that we just read, devotees of the Lord have little regard for tales of his illusory affairs. Such narrations may be suitable in the beginning of devotional service, but they do not factually glorify the Lord. Now, where is all this coming from, that it's suitable for such narrations in the beginning of devotional service? But for those who are really elevated, it's not appropriate, because they're not interested in hearing anything which is connected to the Lord's illusory energies. Why should they be? There are no illusory energies in Vaikuntha. It's beneficial. And they quote, and Sanatana Goswami quotes a verse spoken by Lord Brahma, which I want to read because there's a nice commentary Prabhupada gives on this verse about why it's beneficial for newcomers to devotional service to hear about the Lord in relationship to his illusory energy. Why? Because they're captivated by it and they need to know what is the Lord's illusory energy and how they're captivated by it and how the illusory energy works according to the will of the Lord. And they need to know, as explained in the Bhagavad Gita, one of the principles of knowledge is to know Krishna, is to know Krishna's energies, and to know the pains of birth, death, disease, and old age, and the illusory energy of the Lord. One should see the distinctions between the Lord and his illusory energies, and of course, the living entity. This is real knowledge. It's a sambandha gyan, to know who is the Lord, what is his illusory energy, and who am I, and what's my relationship with the Lord. That's essentially preliminary knowledge for somebody who's still entrapped under the influence of the illusory energy. And to not hear about the illusory energy could be problematic for somebody who's trying to become free from the illusory energy, and especially when they're still attracted to it. And if we actually reflect on how much, as I was speaking about on Prabhupada's disappearance day, how much emphasis Srila Prabhupada gave to the power of the illusory energy. And he really spoke about it so often and with such force. And in fact, one of the very strong arguments Prabhupada had to repeatedly give to us was how to avoid being fooled by Maya's representatives. He had to dismantle our faith in the illusory energy. And if you see how much Prabhupada did, and that's in that score, in that regard, it's definitely an important point to appreciate, and why Srila Prabhupada spoke in the way that he did in reference to Lord Brahma's verse, which is cited here in the commentary to this verse in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that it's a very solid argument to hear about the Lord and his connection with the illusory energy, and how Maya Dakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam, how the illusory energy is working under the Lord's direction. But it's for beginners, and that's what the Vaikuntha Vasis are saying. It's for beginners. When you come to Vaikuntha, this is not real glorification of the Lord. Let's stick to glorification of the Lord. There's no illusory energy here. There's nobody going to be victimized by the illusory energy. And neither does the Lord of Vaikuntha have any interest or contact with the illusory energy here. So why indulge? You, my little friend, Gopakumar, you should come up to a higher understanding. And that's their argument, which is their argument, and let me read. I want to read, as I said, the verse which Sanatana Goswami quotes in his commentary. In the beginning, he says that that Maya means illusion, magic, or deception. Deception, I actually looked up a very short dictionary definition of deception. I thought it may come in handy. It's giving an appearance or impression different from the true one. Misleading. So that's their perception of Krishna's deception. He was specifically deceptive towards Kamsa because he had his objectives he wanted to fulfill, and he had to cheat Kamsa so that he could ultimately rid the world of Kamsa. And that's why they said to annihilate the wicked and to protect the civilized. That's what these Vaikunthavasis said. To annihilate the wicked means to take care of Kamsa, and to protect the civilized, Vasudeva and Devaki. He came for their protection. That was his real purpose for his descent, and his associates from who has descended with him, they all went to assist him in that place. In that place. In Mathura, in Dwarka. And he just temporarily assumed that form by the influence of his illusory powers in order to achieve that goal. Okay. So, he explains this, Ananta Goswami explains this, and then he says a person dissatisfied with this argument might counter that description of the Lord's illusory activities. Excuse me, the descriptions of the Lord's illusory activities are indeed heard and appreciated by knowledgeable Vaishnavas. In other words, look, Lord Brahma gives, you know, he gives a very strong argument of the benefits of hearing about the Lord in relationship to his energies. We have to be careful here. We should be careful not to contradict somebody like Lord Brahma, who's the first spiritual master of all the Vaishnavas in the material world. He's no insignificant soul. So, therefore, what did Lord Brahma say? And I have here, I wanted to read it. And this is to help us understand why their conclusion was, why the conclusion, okay, if somebody's going to talk about it, then we should understand it's for the newcomers. It's for the newcomers. It's for the materialistic people. It's for the neophytes who have to hear about the Lord with relationship to his illusory energy. Now, Prabhupada is going to say something here in this purport, and I won't talk about it until I read it. So, this is the verse. Mayam varnayato musya ishvarasya namodita shrinvata shradhaya nityam Mayayatma namhuyati. Translation. The Lord's activities in association with his different energies should be described, appreciated, and heard in accordance with the teachings of the Supreme Lord. If this is done regularly, with devotion, and respect, one is sure to get out of the illusory energy of the Lord. Purport. The science of learning a subject matter seriously is different from the sentiments of fanatics. fanatics or fools may consider the Lord's activities in relation, fanatics or fools. Interesting. Fanatics or fools may consider the Lord's activities in relation with the external energy to be useless for them. And they may falsely claim to be higher participants in the internal energy of the Lord. But factually, the Lord's activities in relation with the external energy and the internal energy are equally good. On the other hand, those who are not completely free from the clutches of the Lord's external energy should devoutly hear regularly about the activities of the Lord in relation with the external energy. They should not foolishly jump up to the activities of the internal energy. They should not foolishly jump up to the activities of the internal energy, falsely attracted by the Lord's internal potential activities like his Rasa Lila. The cheap reciters of the Bhagavatam are very much enthusiastic about the Lord's internal potential activities, and the pseudo-devotees, absorbed in material sense enjoyment, falsely jump to the stage of liberated souls and thus fall down deeply into the clutches of the external energy. Something I want to read in connection to this. I don't know if I should read it now. If I can find it really quickly, it's very, very relevant. And it was something that I thought to read. Yes, I have it. It's Prabhupada in his lecture. Because Prabhupada talked about this. He goes on, I don't have the whole quote, but he says, Bhagavat Pradhana means realized souls. We should not hear Bhagavatam from a professional man who are observing the Bhagavat Saptaha. I know in Bombay, there is a big speaker of Bhagavatam. He preaches that you remain in your family life very peacefully. This is the instruction of the Bhagavat. He never teaches that you have to give up this nonsense family life and you have to go back to home, back to Godhead. He never preaches that. There's so many examples. He comes to the conclusion that, quote, you live peacefully, as if to live peacefully in this material world is the highest achievement of life. They will never disclose the actual fact that nobody can live in this world peacefully. It is not possible at all. When I read this, I was thinking, I wonder what sometimes some people would think about if somebody just said this in class without attributing it to Prabhupada. They think, you know, what are you saying? You're saying that devotees shouldn't try to be happy in family life? But Prabhupada was speaking about, I don't have the quest of the rest of the reference, but Prabhupada was speaking about those who engage in the Bhagavat Saptahas. He was speaking about those who immediately go to Rasa Lila, and they speak very high topics about Krishna with the gopis and Rasa Lila, and that's their form of entertainment for their audience, who have no conception whatsoever that they're supposed to go back to think about going back to Godhead, to giving up their attachments to this material world, and to become attracted to these pastimes in a way to understand that that's my real That's my real identity. And this world is a false identity. And Prabhupada, of course, was specifically in this lecture, he was attacking that point, that they're very much attracted to hearing Rasa Leela. But that's because the speakers are saying that the goal of the Bhagavad is that you have to give up this nonsense family life and go back to Godhead. They don't say that. Why? Nobody would come and nobody would give them the money for the Bhagavad Sapta because it's a big profit business for them. They can't make such statements. They'll lose their audience because people don't want to hear that. They want to hear high topics, but they don't want to hear that they have nothing to do with, should have nothing to do with this material world. So that was Prabhupada's point. And I guess that's a similar point that Prabhupada is making here. Why go quickly to such topics when you have no idea what such topics are supposed to evoke in the heart is an attachment for this kind of relationship with the Lord and his eternal associates, and which is meant to help us to see through the temporary affairs of this material world. Now, of course, Prabhupada is not saying we should not hear these topics. I don't want to suggest that that's Prabhupada's conclusion. Of course, Prabhupada, in many lectures, he did say, and I quoted it before, if you hear Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, and if by hearing Krishna's pastimes with the gopis, you look at it or think of it in a lustful way, then he says, stop it. Stop it immediately. That was Prabhupada's instructions. So one has to hear it properly from the speaker who understands it and who evokes the right understanding of these pastimes. Doesn't evoke the lusty desires in the heart. And he can speak it in such a way that the lusty desires within the heart gradually diminish and become destroyed. Therefore, one has to hear it, from the appropriate speakers who can speak it in such a way which will evoke the right understanding. So, but yet, Prabhupada, as we understand, especially in the beginning, for neophytes, for those who are still attracted to the material world, those still captivated by the illusory energy, it is very healthy to hear the Lord's connection to the illusory energy. And that is why the Vaikunthavasis were saying, well, I'm going to continue with the purport. That is why the Vaikunthavasis were saying, it's okay to hear it, but for newcomers. Their argument was, in the beginning of devotional practice, these narrations are suitable, but they really don't glorify the Lord. Back to the purport. In second canto, seventh chapter, text 53. Some of them think to hear about the pastimes that the Lord means to hear about his activities with the gopis, or about his pastimes like lifting Govardhan Hill, and they have nothing to do with the Lord's plenary expansions as the Purusha avatars and their pastimes of the creation, maintenance, or annihilation of the material worlds. But a pure devotee knows that there is no difference between the pastimes of the Lord, either in Rasa Leela or in creation, maintenance, or destruction of the material world. Rather, the descriptions of such activities of the Lord as the Purusha avatars are specifically meant for persons who are in the clutches of the external energy. Topics like the Rasa Leela are meant for the liberated souls and not for the conditioned souls. The conditioned souls, therefore, must hear with appreciation and devotion the Lord's pastimes in relationship with the external energy. And such acts are as good as hearing of Rasa Leela in the liberated stage. A conditioned soul should not imitate the activities of liberated souls. Lord Sri Chaitanya never indulged in hearing the Rasa Leela with ordinary men. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Science of God, the first nine cantos prepare the ground for hearing the tenth canto. This will be further explained in the last chapter of this canto. In the third canto, it will be more explicit. Pure devotee of the Lord, therefore, must begin reading or hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from the very beginning and not from the 10th canto. We have several times been requested by some so-called devotees to take up the 10th canto immediately, but we have refrained from such an action because we wish to present Srimad Bhagavatam as the science of Godhead and not as a sensuous understanding for the conditioned souls. This is forbidden by such authorities as Sri Brahmaji. By hearing and reading Srimad Bhagavatam as a scientific presentation, the conditioned souls will gradually be promoted to the higher status of transcendental knowledge after being freed from the illusory energy based on sense enjoyment. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the second canto, seventh chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Scheduled Incarnations with Specific Functions. Commented already in the context of the purport, and I read that verse and purport because Sanatana Goswami gave it as a reference for a justification, for speaking about the Lord's relationship with his illusory energies, but for those specifically in the beginning of devotional service, and not for those who are fully liberated souls in Vaikuntha who have no knowledge what to speak of whatsoever of the illusory energy of the Lord, and neither does the Lord's pastimes in relationship with the illusory energy have any relevance to their existence there. So this was the conservatives' argument. The first of three arguments by the conservatives of Vaikuntha. We still have verses which will be representations of those who are in the middle and those who are more liberal. And this is not, of course, these terms conservative and liberal I'm not taking from Brihad Bhagavatamrita, but they're just simply, I'm just using them to put them at least a little bit in context, that there are some who are were a little bit more liberal with Gopakumar, and therefore, because they were a little bit more liberal, Gopakumar felt a little bit better after hearing their explanation of how it's okay to speak about the Lord's childhood pastimes, even though they're not the pastimes we're most absorbed in here. which is actually what they're saying. So that's a little bit of an explanation of this verse and commentary. And on the Saturday, we will move on to text 105. And we'll chant the little japa. Forgive me, I forgot my beads. I'll go get them, and I'll be back in just a second. I need to remind you that I have to end early, a little earlier, for Dhamma Dharastakam. So we have about maybe 15, 20 minutes for chanting some japa. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Siddhi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Mention one other thing before we end. In relationship to the verse today and a commentary, the example was given of Mohini Murti. And that example was given of how the Lord assumed a form for deceptive purposes so that he would not be discoverable and his intentions would not be discoverable, just as the Vaikunthavasis, they implied that when Krishna, when the Lord Narayan assumed the form, the young form of a young cowherd boy in Gokul, it was so that it was deceptive and so he wouldn't be discoverable. You know, that was actually their explanation. It was his purpose to fulfill his objective and specifically to cheat Kamsa. And therefore, he was hiding out in under the care of Nanda and Yashoda in a form in which he would not be so easily discoverable. And therefore, the example was used of Mohini Murti. And Mohini Murti is also the reason why she's used as an example, because it's the Supreme Personality of Godhead who assumed a form for deception of the demons, because he assumed that form because he knew the demons would become completely overwhelmed and captivated, which, by the way, is also a temporary form. And Rupa Goswami explains in Lagu Bhagavatamrita that Mohini Murti is a form which is assumed temporarily. It's not an eternal form. And I think Hansa is another form. Sukla is another form. They're given as examples as temporary forms. But he assumed that temporary, which supports the Vaikunthavasi's argument that Krishna temporarily, and the Lord Narayan temporarily assumed a form of Krishna to cheat Kamsa, so he wouldn't be discoverable. And just as Mohini Murti, she temporarily assumed that form to cheat the demons. Why? Because she knew that the demons would become, or he knew, that the demons would become so captivated by the beauty of that form that she would make them dancing dogs. I mean, they would comply with any one of her requests. And she even said to them, he, in the form of she, said to the demons, look, if you give me the nectar, I'll see that it's properly shared. And the reason why she appeared is because even the demons were arguing amongst themselves. And some of the more vocal, more powerful demons were taking all the nectar for themselves, and the less powerful demons were thinking, how can we stop this? We need some of that nectar too. So they were fighting amongst themselves. So they were thinking, if we could find somebody who could suitably come and mediate, so it could be equally distributed amongst ourselves, then we'll be happy. Then Mohini Murti appears on the scene with her captivating beauty. And she said, if you give me the pot of nectar, you have to give me the right to decide how I'll distribute it. And they were so, by that time, they were so overwhelmingly captivated that they were ready to say, okay, let her make the decisions. The demons were thinking, surely she'll decide, because the demigods, they're sitting off at a distance anyways, and we're all sitting close to her. We're all getting the more immediate attention from her, and they're far away. Certainly she favors us. So certainly she'll give us the nectar. So then once Mohini Murti had the pot of nectar, as we know, and she convinced the demons that she would make the decision, then she gave the pot to the demigods. So that was her deception. She temporarily assumed a form to deceive the demons, such as Krishna. They're using this as an example. Krishna temporarily assumed a form, or Narayan temporarily assumed a form of Krishna to cheat Kamsa. So actually, there's more. There's a lot of other interesting points about Mohini Murti, and how I think there's an example also elsewhere in the Bhagavatam which describes of how, it's too long, I can't do it. I'll talk about it next time on Saturday. But I forgot to discuss that part about Mohini Murti. And she's used as an example of the Lord assuming a form so that, not an undiscoverable form, to cheat the demons. Of course, Rahu jumped into the line, and he sat with the demigods, and he thought, well, at least I'll get some of the nectar. But Mohini Murti immediately understood that it was a demon in the demigod's line. And although the nectar touched his lips, cut off his head, and the head was saved, but the body didn't get any of the nectar. I have to end here and get ready for Dhammadharasthakam. And Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Gadadhar Shri Govinda Bhakti.